Impact Leaders, the podcast on leaders focusing on impact investment and performance with purpose, supporting the companies that are solving the world's biggest challenges. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact. And this is your host, JP Dahlman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Impact Leaders. In today's episode of Impact Leaders, we have Tom McGillicuddy.
Did it.
As a guest. Perfect. Hi, Tom. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you so much for being with us today.
No, thank you for having me on. Yeah, appreciate it.
Real pleasure. Tom is the co-founder of Ticker, which is all about investing in change. Ticker is an impact investment app built for the next generation of investors. Yes, you millennials and Generation Z, we're talking, I think. We are on a mission to prove that you can earn money and have a positive impact at the same time. This is straight from their website, as you can tell. And you can start from just £5, you know, today. Tom has over 8 years' experience in the investment management industry. He spent the last 4 years at Wellington Management, working with our impact investment team, and he is a CFA charter holder. So that's perfect. The intro.
Thank you, Tom, for the intro. Yeah. Appreciate it.
How are you doing today?
Good, good, very good. Glad to be here.
So as we start, we will ask you what we ask every guest that we have in the podcast, and is, Tom, what is impact investing?
So for me, and I think it's more or less the Gin's definition, it's investments made into companies or funds with two purposes: to generate a financial return, so at least a market return, and but only doing it by investing in companies that are trying to address a social or environmental issue. That's what impact investing is to me.
Perfect. And about Ticker, so how did you come to create Ticker?
So the other co-founder of the business, a guy called Matt Latham, me and him both worked in finance together for 8-9 years each. We actually met on our first day in finance on the Barclays grad scheme when we were like 22. And we lived together for the first 8 weeks in Canary Wharf while we were training. So we became very good friends straight away. And towards the end of our time in finance, at the time that I was at Wellington Management, I was working with the impact investment team there, investing pension funds money into impact investments around the world. And Matt was working advising charities at Barclays on their socially responsible investments. Okay. So we both kind of came into a similar kind of sector and then realized that there wasn't a convenient way for us to invest our own money in this way. Mm-hmm. So then we set about to try and like create something that our peers and our friends and our generation would like to use. And then it kind of became a little bit broader than that when I started to, you know, get more ingrained with the impact team, and impact storytelling became very prevalent to me, and the stories of the companies. So this is the example that I always use. So I'll give you the little story. Mm-hmm. I went in the fund that I was working on. Quite a lot of our investments were in India, and we went to visit a company in India, and I went to a village, and we met families that benefited from the company, and they told us how the companies had changed their lives, and I started to realize at that point that anyone could understand that story. You don't have to be in finance or investing to understand why that's a good thing. So I went home and told my mum, and my mum said, that's the first time I've ever understood what you do as a job is, you know, investing in these companies, company does good thing, family benefits. You know, so then we started to realize, Matt and I, that this is actually more than just solving the problems or solving the needs of a few people in finance that wanted to invest this way. Maybe everyone would like to do this if they could, because could impact investing be the tool to bring people to invest that have never done it before because they now understand it? So that was the hypothesis that kind of started off the work, and that was the little background.
And that was over 4 years ago.
Well, that was maybe we met. So Matt and I met 8-9 years ago. The idea started to form, I would say, about 3 years ago, something like that. And then we started working on it, and it just picked up steam. during that period, and we went on, you know, different tangents with the idea, and because we were doing it outside of our day jobs and in the evenings, so it took a while, but we got there eventually.
And so since you mentioned that, so first of all, interesting. And thank you to the graduate program for bringing you together. I like it. Sometimes, you know, we take for granted the indirect impact of some of the things that we do.
I mean, that graduate program was, you know, was transformational for, you know, a lot of us that were on it. And I've made a bunch of good friends that we've all stayed in touch with. And a lot of the people on the graduate scheme have gone on to form their own companies, not necessarily in impact, but, you know, I think it opened people's eyes to what they could achieve. And, you know, Matt and I were very fortunate to meet each other there and strike up the friendship that we have.
In terms of the evolution of you guys in the last 3 years, so are there any, well, aside from the obvious point which we'll come to, which is, you know, the creation of and launch on Ticker, but were there any kind of highs or lows or kind of quick lessons that, you know, you can share with
many
entrepreneurs? And
many lows, many highs. I mean, don't let anyone pretend that this is easy. It's really, really not. Matt and I talk about that every day. I think the luckiest thing for Matt and me is that, you know, we met each other, we get along so well, we trust each other 100%, and we couldn't have done it without each other. So people have asked me before, you know, what advice would you give to someone starting a company? I would say, get a co-founder, because, you know, you come to better conclusions for ideas when one's stressed, the other one isn't, and helps them out, and you just work your way through this together. And there was plenty of times in that 3 years where we thought we'd hit a dead end and it was over, you know, and then we'd figure something out and we'd have one meeting and then bumble along. And I think, you know, one piece of advice from that would be, you know, a lot of meetings seem like they're not going to go anywhere, but take the meeting, try and figure something out, because it can always lead to something else. And that happened to us probably 10, 15 times where we thought we'd exhausted every avenue. We had one last meeting. That meeting led to another conversation. Then we were back on track. And that just happened so many times and continues to happen in many ways today. So that's a bit of advice.
Very nice. And then do you rely on any other external help around this, you know, in terms of, and where I'm going with this, because I didn't think about this question before, is it just the two of you and the two of you supporting each other, or do you have, you know, a wider support, you know, scheme, or, you know, or do you guys believe in the secret? Or
don't believe in the secret. The secret's kind of just like, you know, if I could summarize all those kind of like self-help books, it's like, work very hard, get very lucky, capitalize on the luck. That's basically what those books are. But anyway, aside, yes, we're very fortunate to have a bunch of experienced advisors. One in particular, Mark, who he's had a bunch of companies that he's founded as either a technical founder, and he's been the CEO. So he's been through what we've been through 10 times before. So when we're, you know, we speak to him regularly about, you know, the things that we're working through here. And then there's people that I've worked with.
That's Mark.
Mark Cunningham. So he was introduced to me as soon as I left my job at Wellington, I got introduced to him, and he's been, he's a, like a, you know, father figure kind of senior person who's been there before. Yeah. And there's a bunch
true advisor and mentor.
True advisor, yeah. And then there's a bunch of people that we've met, like my first boss at Barclays, a guy called Karan Seshpal, and then my boss and mentor at Wellington, Eric Rice, who, you know, give us a lot of advice over the years and still do to this day. So we're very fortunate in that we've built good relationships during our career that we can draw on today, and people that have either been through this before or been through a similar thing or know somebody that has, you know, without a team effort. And, you know, we can talk about the rest of the team actually that are here that now really have taken Matt and me, you know, and us to the next level. It's a team effort. It's nowhere near just Matt and me. We've relied on a lot of people, and I think, you know, never be afraid to ask for help and go and seek it out, because without that, we wouldn't have got anywhere.
Nice. Now, if we talk a little bit about, you know, the version of, you know, today, today, and the app, right?
Yeah.
So, was there a moment where you went like, okay, this is it, and we're going for this?
Probably, yeah. I mean, so Matt and I left our full time jobs in May, June last year,
2018.
But we probably could have done it a little bit earlier, but it's a very frightening thing to do. So when the moment came that we realized that, you know, we got on as far as we could doing this as like a side project in our day jobs. And our day jobs were taxing day jobs. We were working long hours, like investment, asset management, you know, hours. There was a big dawning realization that...
Which is for some people that may not know, that could be anything from
60 hours, you know, more weeks, stuff like that. And then trying to do this on the side and trying to have... You know, trying to hold down relationships as well and things like that. It became, you know, difficult. But we got this idea, Ticker, to a point where it was either time to do it or not do it. And we had to do it, obviously, because we worked so hard on it for so long. And then the night before we handed in our notices, our jobs, that was the scariest night of my life. I think I got
so far.
Yeah, it's 'cause so far. Yeah. I got into work like 3 hours before anyone else, and I just sat there waiting for someone to come in so I could tell them what I was doing. But it's been the most rewarding like 8-9 months of my life, you know, by far since. But yeah, it was like around early 2018 where we knew it was time to do it. We'd figured everything out we could to that point. There was still so much that we didn't know and so much that we encountered since that point that we never thought we would encounter. But because we were full time and we were building a team, our ability to deal with problems, the speed at which we could deal with problems, just went through the roof.
Yeah.
So it was the right timing.
And you had an MVP at what point?
We had an MVP that summer, basically. So we had prototype that summer.
Last year.
Yeah, in 2018. And then in October, we launched the invitation only beta to small cohorts of users that had registered on a waiting list to kind of trial out the app on iOS, on Apple.
Which roughly how many did you have at that point?
There was about, I mean, we don't disclose exact user numbers, but the waiting list was in, you know, early thousands, something like that.
Yeah.
That was live money, you know, revenue users. That was, you know, fully testing the product. So it was beyond the prototype at that point. Yeah. It was a fully functioning, regulated investment management platform in October. And what we did was we were like phasing users in every day, every few days, getting the feedback, working with them. And we ran that till, you know, just December before Christmas, when we were comfortable enough to then put it in the App Store to kind of extend the beta. We didn't really announce it. We didn't do a big bang, like launch Instagram, 5 million users in one night kind of thing. It wasn't ever intended to be like
podcast.
So we just put it in and because really what we're doing now is Matt and I have spent the past since then speaking with users. So 15-minute calls, some face-to-face meetings if some of the users are in London, but just figuring out what they love, what they don't like, what they want to improve. And that's been really rewarding. And it's really insightful because you get to understand who these people are, you know, and getting into their minds and what they actually want in the products has been very valuable. So now we're working through all that feedback. And I think the version of the app today, by the end of this month, in the middle of March, will look markedly different based on that.
Okay. And on that point, so who are your customers now? Yeah. A bit of, you know, if you can share a little bit of the profile.
Happy to share the profile, definitely. So 90% of them are aged 25 to 35, which kind of our hypothesis in the beginning, that we would attract that kind of age group. There are some above and a small percentage below. About 40% female. And ideally that'd be 50% in time, but I think that's a good start for an investment app because normally investment apps are just dominated by men. And they're predominantly based in London, Bristol, Manchester and Edinburgh, which again, we kind of hypothesized it would be young millennial professionals living in the cities. And that's kind of who it is today. And I think for the next year or so, that'll continue to be a similar kind of profile, I think. But ultimately, the goal is to get, you know, actually within that, there's a lot of first-time investors as well. It's probably 60% first-time investors as well, which is good. You know, we'd like to, that's our ultimate audience. You know, in 3 years' time, we'd love to have people that, you know, the vast majority of our user base, people that have never invested before, but, you know, we are the first investment service that's come along that's made them feel comfortable and made them feel, you know, made them, given them a reason to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the goal.
A great tool as well, right?
Yeah.
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 Okay. And how are you reaching them? So how are you getting...
Today, it's all word of mouth. So random things have happened. For example, We found out that Lloyds Bank sent around an internal email and had featured us on this internal email, mm-hmm. which sparked off loads of people downloading the app in Edinburgh and Aberdeen. And you know, so we found that out. And I think there's been some early PR that we've managed to get. And then me going to events, speaking, meetups in London, Matt doing the same thing, and then friends telling friends. We know people are referring the app today in a decent number of our early user base. So it's just pure word of mouth and the occasional thing like this that we do. Because I think we'll start to do more external activity, but only when this next wave of improvement is through. So the user experience goes from being, you know, pick random numbers from a 6-star to a 7-star experience, and the goal being 10 eventually. It makes sense to do that once we've worked through what we already know users want. So that's the plan.
Okay. Anything in particular that is popping up as something that people really like or people kind of want to improve?
I mean, there's a lot of good feedback and a lot of constructive feedback. A lot of the constructive feedback is, you know, 99.9% of it we already knew. We knew that people would want these things. And I think the overwhelming good feedback is that, you know, a lot of the people that are in the app today that have found out about us, the early adopter audience, the, you know, the early users, have kind of been waiting for this. Mm-hmm. They've been waiting for someone to come along and make it convenient for them. And I would consider myself to be in that crowd. So I'm the earliest adopter of something like this. So if someone came along and did this, I'd be the first user, you know, no questions asked, and I'd have a massively positive view of the company and all that kind of stuff. The user experience has been, so the sign up user experience and the user experience of the app overwhelmingly has been very, very positive. The thing that people now want is more company stories, more engagement in the app, which was always that, you know, if you build it in stages, we built a very good sign up process that people get through and they're very comfortable with. They sign up and now in app.
I've tested that and it's actually really nice.
Yeah,
and
now we need to engage them more. And there's a little bit of redesign from the in app homepage. A lot of the first time investors found it a little bit daunting, which I totally understand. And the new design for that is completed and done and will be released in the next few weeks, mm-hmm. make it a lot more user friendly for them. And then it's this visual element to the app that we've been talking about, that story in India that I told at the beginning. How can we recreate that for users digitally? Now, think about a 10-star user experience in the future when we're a big company and we can do these things. Wouldn't it be cool if we took a user to visit a company and we filmed it and then we sent it to other users in the app, like a little 30-second clip? How amazing would that be? So if someone downloads the app, they sign up, the money's in, they're a great user experience in the sign up, and then they get a video sent to them straight away, like, you are doing this amazing thing. That's where we want to get to, and the stages to get there. Okay. And I think one of the stages in between is we just do little storytelling company profiles ourselves that we're doing right now, and we send it to them visually, whether it's video or whether it's some kind of other visual means. The other thing that we've had a lot of feedback on is first-time investors, of which we've got a decent number, a lot of them want some investment education. So we could use that visual center to just send them a little bit of investment education. And at the moment, that has been just me stood in front of a camera for 30 seconds explaining a concept in like simple terms and just sending it to people. So we'll continue to do that, I think, and build like maybe mini courses of that kind of thing if that's what people want.
Yeah.
So those are the main areas.
Okay. So what would be the 30-second kind of explanation of how it works? You know, if somebody's just listening now and thinking of going and downloading it.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's downloadable only in the UK, right?
Only the UK today. EU countries soon. Brexit dependent. Yeah. No, it's not actually dependent on Brexit. It's just when we want to do it. Yeah. The 30 seconds is, so you download the app. It takes about 2 to 4 minutes to sign up, depending on how used to these signups you are. During the signup, you take a screenshot of your passport or driving license, and then you select an investment theme that resonates with you the most. So it can be climate change, social impact, disruptive technology, or a combination of the three. Then you choose a risk level, high, medium, and low, that you're comfortable with. And then you can start investing from £5. We encourage people to invest monthly. It's better for them long term. It phases them into the market. It's mm-hmm. especially good for first time investors. And then in the background, you're invested in hundreds of global businesses that are addressing the theme that you've selected.
Okay. And in terms of So there's a couple of things that I thought about that I think you address on the website, but again, just for the benefit of the listeners, right? So security.
Yeah. So, I mean, security is a good one. I mean, all data is, we don't sell any data to any third parties. I've actually just done a video about this. So when you download the app today, you won't have seen this, unfortunately. Okay. You get a little video of me saying you're about to go through the sign-up process. Just as an FYI, we're taking some personal details just to set your account up. We don't share it with anybody at all. You know, we charge people to use the app, and we can discuss that at some point. So we're not making any revenue elsewhere. And I don't like the idea of selling people's data for anything. Mm-hmm. So it's all stored, encrypted on the cloud, you know, bank level encryption, as safe as, you know, industry standards. Okay.
So and then obviously that touches on the protection, right? And then you mentioned regulation. So you are regulated.
Yeah, we're regulated. Regulated by the FCA in the UK, which then will give us permission to be regulated in other EU countries, all being well with the current Brexit negotiations. But yeah, so as far as someone's concerned, yes, we are a startup, but in terms of the protection, it's like, you know, we fall under the same regulation as established companies.
Yeah. So, which obviously it also protects, you know, how much money up to a certain limit.
Yeah, it's 50,000. So if we go bankrupt, you still own the underlying companies. So they're protected under the financial compensation scheme.
Yeah.
So there's that protection as well.
Okay, perfect. So you mentioned about the model then. How does it work? So the actual revenue model for you.
Revenue model, so you charge 0.7% on the money that you put on the platform. So if you put that in actual human numbers, if you put £1,000 invested on the platform, that's £7 a year. We take it monthly, so it's 60p a month. So if someone's used to a Netflix subscription of £11.99, comparatively we're cheap. So it's
percentage of a total invested.
Percentage of a total invested, 0.7%.
Fixed rate, basically.
Everyone's on the same rate, yeah.
Okay. Which is, again?
0.7%.
Okay. And then just for, you know, again, I don't know if people read too much or anything about this, but in comparison to other...
It's very, very similar to the middle of the market kind of thing. You know, we're not the most expensive, we're not the cheapest. We're kind of in the middle.
So why would people invest, or why should people invest, you know, with Tigger?
Good question. I think genuinely today it's the most convenient way for you to align what you believe in with your money. So especially of our generation, people now care about, you know, the clothes they buy, the food they eat, but the money that's just sat there, maybe it's invested, maybe it's not, and they probably don't know what it's doing. So why wouldn't you put it to work in something that aligns with something that you believe in? That's how I came to this part of the industry in the first place. I started to care a lot about the climate specifically. So I was like, you know, what could I do personally to try and have a positive impact on that issue? And part of that is aligning your money with companies that are trying to do a good, trying to solve the problem, you know? So that's why people should do it.
Okay. And that's, I think, is a really good reason. I can tell that, you know, at this point it's all kind of self-assessment, right? So I decide, you know, kind of what areas and what themes.
Yeah.
I don't decide actual companies.
No.
Right?
No.
But you have the different... kind of areas that people can read about, right?
Yeah.
And you invest in actual assets, or do you invest in other funds, that money?
Yeah.
So that money that all, by the way, people, so that people understand, you bring all together, right, into your own, you know, would you have one fund, do you have...
There's a series in the background, and I think the answer will change over time, but for now...
I get too technical, but...
Yeah, I want to get too technical. In the background today is some existing funds that express the themes. In the future, we may do something different that we're working through, where we have built the funds in the background effectively. So without getting too technical, we've built the portfolios in the background. Mm-hmm. The portfolios consist of some other funds, if you know what I mean. So in the future, what we're looking to do is control all of the funds that make up the overall portfolio that you invest in. But that's a few months down the line.
Okay. And then for people understanding as well, so what this shows, or which this gives as well, is an extra reassurance, because you invest in established funds that are already regulated and have been going for much longer than
Tigger. Exactly, with you know, other people's investments in them already, and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, they've been funds that could have been around for years and years and years, established funds.
Which, again, maybe a more sophisticated investor will be thinking about in advance, but perhaps, you know, people that are investing for the first time don't know and potentially don't care.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, it's interesting to know what people actually care about and what concerns they have. And for first-time investors, they don't come with a lot of the concerns that people who've invested before have. So they don't, you know, they don't know to ask certain questions, but
When we say concerns, we mean fears and burns.
Fears, yeah. They don't. They don't come with baggage. Yeah. You know, they just come with, oh, this is a great idea. Can I do it? You know, so.
And it's a great experience.
Exactly. So it's for them, it's the first time they've been able to do this kind of thing. So they're just happy with that. Whereas you have people like me who like ask a series of technical questions, which may or may not be relevant.
Yeah. Or like me, yeah. Okay, and is there anything like this in the market right now?
No, we're the first to market in Europe doing this specific thing. There obviously are the digital investment products, but they're not impact or not sustainable. We are, we're the only company startup doing this that's solely focused on this. There's a couple of small companies in the US that are still new, that are still trying to figure out the US market. Mm-hmm. But there's no doubt there'll be a bunch of others that come out relatively soon, because, you know, it's a growing part of the market. It's people agree it's a good idea. And I think in finance, it's never a winner takes all game. If you look at, you know, investment firms, banks, insurance firms, you know, what we're building really now is, with the likes of Revolut, Monzo, us, other digital investment offerings, this is the next generation of finance firm.
Yes.
So there's going to be a bunch of us that succeed.
Yes. And I think what I can add to that, what I have observed is that, yeah, there are many out there, but it's, again, they're generic, right?
So
they're let's call it maybe vanilla for now, or kind of non-specific, where you have actually picked, you know, a very specific sector.
Or part
of the sector.
Yeah, and it's something that's, everyone who works in the team, it's in their DNA. You know, it's, this is what we want to do. We'll never change that. This will be the part of the market that we focus on for as long as we're around.
Brilliant. So now, in terms of, this is something that, you know, we keep being asked by listeners, right, which is around kind of so how are you identifying and how you're measuring, you know, that impact, you know, how do you guys are looking into that?
So it's an interesting question that always gets asked, and I, not that I'm frustrated with the question, I would never be frustrated with you. It's that what I identify, and this is something that Amy at Tribe also kind of semi-agrees with, if I'm going to paraphrase her in this, it's measurement is not perfect now in any impact investment, but that can't be a reason to not do it. You know, practitioners like us need to just go and do it, create the market, and then the rules and all the measurement will fall out after it. And the parallel that I kind of draw is like venture capital in the 70s didn't really exist, and it was like the Wild Wild West. But now it's very, very, you know, it's very, very understood. You have pre-seed funds, seed funds, VC funds, you know exactly what people are doing. You have sector funds. The rules and the frameworks get shaken out from doing the thing. So the way I think about this is, I've been involved in the academic discussions at Oxford University and sat on various panels about how we should measure impact. And I think that's up for someone else to finally decide the framework for. And when it is, we'll plug into that. What we've realized is users of our app and first-time investors and just people generally, if we showed them in the app, right, oh, your investments have save this amount of CO2 in a year, that number's very, very abstract to people. But if you show people like a wind turbine and a village and people that have benefited from the wind turbine, that's what they want to see. It's the emotional thing. It's not the digits. So for us, the story's more important. So as long as we're setting out from a positive default position, you know, we're trying to do a good thing and reporting back the good thing, it, you know, the rules and how to measure it perfectly, that'll happen in time, and we can choose whether we incorporate that into what we do. And but my viewpoint still to this day is that people buy the stories more than they buy the data. The data doesn't really impress people. It doesn't really mean anything to most people. Now, we do use some data to inform some of the stories that we develop. We obviously use data to build the portfolios. That's maybe for us to use and not for us to transmit to our users. No users asking for that. So that's my kind of stance on it all at the moment.
So from that point, I was thinking, so internally then, so what is, if it is one kind of KPI that you are thinking of in terms of impact, you know, do you have one already?
It's different per, well, the way I used to work in the Wellington team was there was a different KPI per company. There was no one KPI for the fund. It was every company had its own KPI that we marked that company on, because sectors are so different. A renewable energy KPI is going to be so different to like an affordable housing company's KPI, or you know, an education company in Brazil and the KPI that we use for them. So it's going to be very bespoke. So yeah. That's why it's if we try to do that today in a startup with, you know, 6-7 people full time, 8 people full time, it's not for us to do right now. It would be a waste of resources for us to try and crack that whilst other people are trying to crack it. So that's kind of how I think about it.
But for now, just thinking out loud, it could just be the fact that you're giving, you know, access to people doing.
I mean,
like
for us, the actual what we, you know, in the office downstairs, it's our goal is to get millions of people doing this, because imagine. The KPI for us is to get millions of individuals impact investing every month. Because imagine the power that that has and the change that that can have. Yeah, even if it's small amounts, it would be huge. So that's the KPI for us as an organization. And that ties into impact as well. The KPI is aligned to overall impact. That's what we think about as an organizational level.
Okay. Since you mentioned looking forward, right? Talking about the future now.
Yeah.
We had a call the other day, right? And you were telling me that you have recently closed your, you know, fundraise.
Yeah.
So you've been, before I was going to ask you, so all the kind of the beta launch and all of that part, did you do all of that self-funded?
Or we did some of it self-funded. There was some in the overall seed or pre-seed round or whatever you want to call it, depending on what country you're from, America or Britain. Yeah. There was some money at the beginning of that from two angels that helped us fund some of the point to the beta. The most of the money came in as the beta began. So it's given us the ability to build a team, work on product iterations and start to plan for the future. So we did that, and that came in October. But we will be fundraising again, you know, and we'll be fundraising again to expand and improve the product.
I'll come back to that, but in terms of, you know, and I spoke with you on the phone, and you know, I found these stories, you know, quite nice to share as well. I know certain numbers you can repeat or share whatever you want, but basically you were not really generating that much revenue.
No.
And or if anything,
we won't generate big revenue numbers for a while, you know. Yeah. So
but you managed to obtain or attract, you know, significant amount of funding for, you know, in non-revenue.
Yeah. Know, so we had, you know, it's all publicly available. It was, you know, not far from £1 million of like funding at that point. And that was with a prototype and a vision, you know. And some aligned investors, you know, who really believed in this specific sector and believed in, you know, what we were doing, and had perhaps known Matt and me for a while or worked with us before.
Were they conscious impact investors or they just kind of, you just landed, you know, a meeting with them and then?
I think some definitely.
One of these 10 meetings that you talked about, number 10, number 11, that actually worked out.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of meetings involved in the round. I don't know what the actual numbers are, but high volume. Some of our impact investors, you know, our biggest investor is a vehicle called SLJ Investment Partners, and they have a social tech focus. So there's clearly an alignment there. And then there was angel investors, you know, for the remaining half of the round, and some of them just really buy into the vision and the growth story, because we're at the intersection, I suppose, of impact investing and like fintech growth. So you can be one or the other, or you could be both. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people buy into the growth, really like the impact side of things, because they see it as a generational shift and a trend and a structural trend. Structural trend is probably an oxymoron, but a structural change. And then you have some that are like, I love the idea. I'm in with the mission oriented side of the business. So we have two kinds of people that, you know, want to get involved, I think.
That's great. That's a great lesson as well to share, because, you know, most people, I think, in general, don't believe that you can actually attract any funding, pre-revenue.
Yeah.
So even I was surprised when you were telling me everything that you've done. So.
I still think it's, I mean, it's still relatively rare unless you're in like health tech or med tech sectors, they get pre-revenue funding. But, you know, we had a prototype. It was just about to be technically revenue generating, or very, very, very small amounts. But yeah, I mean, yeah, the lesson for us would be, you know, to other people would be find the right investors, speak to the right people, and then if you have aligned people that are in they're investing in the company, then you're going to hit bumps along the way. But as long as everyone's like bought into the overall mission of the company and the vision, then that's a strong position to be in. So I think we were very fortunate in many respects. You have to be lucky to do what we've done. But yeah, we found the right people.
And what are the plans? You know, the target. You mentioned some of the kind of millions of users. Yeah. You know, so do you have any milestones that you are kind of aiming for that you would like to share with the?
Yeah, I mean,
with the universe.
I don't know if we are disclosing these numbers, but I mean, yeah, year five goals are in the millions in the EU. That's the goal. Is the EU, and it all stages back from there. So we've got to build a sustainable company and a sustainable technology and something that really resonates. So it'll take us some time to get there. But yeah, that's the North Star goal in the future.
Okay, perfect. Because obviously these investors, you know, have to be aligned and buying that growth that
exactly.
you mentioned,
yeah.
And then be comfortable with the numbers being realistic and
yeah.
And
yeah, so. I mean, what you're starting to see in the US and here is now there are fintechs with mainly millennial customers that are setting a precedent in terms of user numbers. You have user numbers in the US of like 3 million in 3 to 5 years. You have same really in Europe. So the user number goals are realistic if you achieve, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it would have been a lot harder maybe 4 years ago without a Stash or a Acorns in the US and without a Monzo and a Revolut here and N26 here, because they've come along and just
yes.
they've shown that it's achievable. So I think that's paved the way for us to be able to talk like that and talk in those numbers and sound realistic.
Okay, thank you to them. So how can other people help you, either right now or in the near future? Do you need more advisors? Do you need maybe some investors, you know, to start kind of approaching you? Do you need?
I think people to download the app is probably the easiest thing for anyone to do, and it's probably the best thing for us. And just tell one friend about it, you know, and so send it to someone that would like it. You know, that would be the. That's what we're focused on, really. If that happens more and, you know, we start getting to that point, then everything else it kind of gets taken care of. So if it resonates with you, just download it and tell a friend. I think that's the best thing anyone could do for us.
Good. Apple Store. Now, as we're coming to the end of the podcast, I just wanted to ask you a couple of maybe more personal questions.
Go for it.
Just maybe about you,
so that
people get to know you a little bit
Matt
better.
Matt would say this is now my favorite topic, so if I don't start talking.
So you told us a little bit about how you became the co-founder, of Ticker, mm-hmm. and how you met your co-founder as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then, if people ask you like what drives Tom, what is it that is making you do all of these?
I'm a very mission driven person who needs like a cause to devote myself to, whether that's in work or outside of work. I exercise a lot. I've always got an exercise goal and a work goal, and I think this part of me, the impact investing part, I mean, I ended up in finance as like some kind of like random event. My mum always reminds me that I once said when I was at university that I'd never move to London and I'd never work in finance. And here I am in London working in finance. So once in the finance world, I realized that I wanted to use the skills that I'd managed to obtain to benefit other people or the planet or, that kind of like big idea. Mm-hmm. And this was the most... This became the clearest way for me to do it, given my skill set and where I was up to. So, my overarching guiding light is impact investing. And I think if someday I'm out of Ticker for whatever reason, whether I'm old and someone else is better at running the company than me, I'll still be doing impact investing in some way. That's why I really care about. And when I first started working on the impact fund at Wellington, I would have happily stapled presentations to be involved in the fund. I would have done anything. I was just lucky enough that they asked me to go and analyze some stocks. But yeah, that's what drives me.
Okay. And then if I just drill a little bit more in terms of, you mentioned where I care the most, you said, is impact investing, right? So is there any, let's say, you know, if we actually haven't mentioned the SDGs, so we may as well mention it now. So is there any one area that you really care about, that really resonates, that really touches your heart?
I really like Eric, who I work with at Wellington. Me and him really like the base of the pyramid stuff. Emerging markets, financial inclusion, impact investing is what, you know, bringing services that we take for granted to people that have never had them, and then the lives transforming. That really feels like it's central to me for some reason. And we did a lot of that in the old fund. So that's something that really resonates with me. I think just because of the power that you could, the change you can enact, just through simple technological advances that we take for granted here on other people's lives, that's something that, you know, I think is really valuable and we need to do more of.
Okay. So if we think, we talked fintech trends, then you definitely must have somewhere in the plan kind of expansion to Asia and Africa, you know.
I think that would scare the shareholders, I think.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, the 5-year plan is EU. Beyond that, you know, who knows? You know. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's just the only reason why I mentioned that as well, because I was looking at a report from, I think it was PwC. And they were, you know, quoting some of the numbers, you know, the 1.8 billion of people that are going to be moving to the cities, you know, with access to phones. And that is all really happening. So I think by next year, I think, you know, there are going to be more than half of the population that is a working population, right? Compared to the Europe and the US, etc. So
there's huge challenges with that that need capital.
And it's financial inclusion, right? That's one of the key things that, you know, they don't have access or they don't have the understanding.
Yeah, exactly. Capital needs to be mobilized to help that problem, basically. So we need to create more ways of helping people to contribute to the solutions to those problems. And then ours is just one version of that idea. But I think in order to get change properly globally, you can't just rely on institutional money to do it. You know, retail money is a huge wall of money. So you just need to create more convenient ways for, you know, people on the street to be a part of it. Mm. You know, so hopefully, you know, through us, we inspire a bunch of different types of companies to come and, you know, tackle it in a different way. Because then you get real change.
Excellent. Anyone that inspires you or that inspired you to do this, or I sometimes say any, or a book or something.
There's a lot of people. I mean, the most inspirational people people that I know, and then people that I don't know. So people that I know will be, parents are very, very, you know, determined, hardworking people. Set a great example for me. I had an amazing English teacher at high school when I was 15, 16, when I was coming to the end. If it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have gone to college, and then I wouldn't have gone to university, and I wouldn't be in front of you now. He was a transformational guy called Mr. Wright. So he was
Wright.
Maybe someday he'll hear this.
What did he do?
He did this thing, amazing thing. And it's the reason why I then went and did politics at A-level. Was it was English literature. And sometimes he would come into the room and he would sense that the room was a bit restless. So he would divide the room into two and get us to debate a topic. Just a random, he'd pick a random topic and we'd take opposing sides of the debate. And it opened my eyes to a lot of like political concepts and just forming arguments and thinking about the other side of a point of view. And it just transformed the way I was thinking. It made me, up until that point, I didn't read really at all. Then I started reading. It made me intellectually curious, which is the greatest gift anyone can give anyone. And I don't know why it did it, but it just triggered me. And then after that, I was just never the same again. Okay. So he was pivotal.
A bit of debate club.
It was the debate club. I think it's something that happens in, you know, private schools, people debate. And in you know, public schools, it doesn't happen, but I think it should. And there's actually a charity in London that I've done a little bit of work with in the past, but I don't at the moment, but I'd really recommend, called Debate Mate. And they go into public schools and do it. And it's just unbelievable. Like, how, you know, the change in people from doing it is just transformational. So
fascinating. If I may share what happened to me, you know, in so as you know, I have a background experience in investment banking, right? And whenever I talked to the guys that were my peers, right, and that they were the best at, let's say, pitching or discussing or, you know, putting in ideas forward or trying to, you know, influence the clients, management, etc. I started asking questions around, okay, so how is it that you, you know how to, you know, discuss this way or talk that way? Or, and most of them was just like you said, they were part of the debate club.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why when I joined Barclays on the graduate scheme, and I noticed people that had been, you know, privately educated, they were just very comfortable. They could hold themselves in any situation. They could, you know, talk under pressure because they've been trained to do so. So I think that training is so valuable. And then if I was to pick someone that had inspired me that I don't know, and this is like a young white male cliche, but Elon Musk. So I read his biography that Ashley Vance wrote, and that was a big moment for me, that because I'd never, and I still really wouldn't consider myself to be entrepreneurial in this, in the sense, same sense of the word, that I would consider Matt, who's the other co-founder of the business, he's a true entrepreneur. I'm someone who I'm devoted to this sector. So I'm involved, and this, you know, this is what I'm doing because I love the sector. But it was just his attitude to risk for himself, and what it made me realize was, you know, people were saying to me when I handed him a notice at Wellington, this is a huge risk. You know, why would you do this? I was like, you know, I'm not married. I don't have any children. I don't have any outgoings. The only person I've got to look after is myself. And I barely do that, but I scrape by. If I can't do this now, then you know, when could I do it? And what's the worst case scenario? It just doesn't work. And then, you know, and then I progress and do something else. So there was no risk for me. I actually saw more risk to not doing it because I'd regret it than actually going doing it. So it was from reading, you know, about people like Elon Musk, that, you know, he started Zip2, made $20 million, then went into PayPal, made $100 million, and then he started a rocket company and took over Tesla and made that his own. Like, he just continually recycles his money for the benefit of society, and I think that's just inspirational. So, but it is a cliche because I talk about Tesla and Elon Musk a lot, and everyone in the team laughs at me.
It is a wonderful story. You know, yeah. I read the book as well, and it did really inspire me. You know, yeah. I think. And also, he's again, we can talk about it all day, I think, but his story is so real. And I think what maybe some people don't know is the parts where, you know, he had no money.
Yeah.
He was living in a, you know, in friend's house.
Yeah, amazing.
You know, he was getting, you know, people lending him money, and, you know, his outgoings, you know, with private jets, et cetera, were on the hundreds of thousands. So it's not like anyone can just give you a couple of, you know, hundred pounds or £1,000.
I know.
So, and then most people don't know about that, you know.
Yeah. He risked all of his money to do SpaceX and
the
Tesla.
Fact that I think that it was like 1 or 2 days
from
collapsing completely. And, you know, he managed to get the last deal and all of those things. I think that's the thing that people don't talk about.
Yeah, I think people just see him now as this like eccentric billionaire, and he had a patchy 2018 with his public image, but, you know, that's not the story. Yeah. The story is before that, how he got to that point. And even his upbringing was very hard, and, you know, he consistently risked a lot. So, a lot of admiration.
But it's good way to actually move into the next question, which is about leadership. So we are Impact Leaders is, you know, the name of the podcast. Yeah. And I always ask, you know, our guest, you know, what is a leader, you know, to you?
It's a very good question. I think, you know, if I can, I'll talk about the leaders that I've observed as, you know, as being good leaders. And I think clear communication is one. Knowing how to behave under pressure, you're not showing that, but, you know, not overreacting in situations. Leading by example is one that I fundamentally believe in. I think, you know, leading by example, clear communication, being not unflappable, but, you know, being, you know, sensible and not overreacting, I think that can go a long way for an organization and for a team. Like I said, the leading by example is a big one for me personally that really resonates with me. And I think something that other leaders have done to me in the past is, you know, insulating the team from. And this is either in work or when I've played in sports teams, insulating the team from all the negative stuff that's happening outside of the team or at an organizational level. Protecting them, letting them get on with their job and letting them be excellent and you dealing with all of that separately. I think that's a good leadership trait. Those are the things that immediately spring to mind for me. I think, and obviously, you've got to inspire people to work. And I think we benefit here because we have a mission that people can attach themselves to. Mm-hmm. They're coming here to do a good thing. And because, you know, Matt and I and the team really believe in what we're doing, you know, we come across as people that really, really care about what we're doing. I think everyone is therefore a leader in their own right, especially in this organization. And we lead each other by determination, excellence, and just caring about what we're doing. What we're doing is bigger than us, and it's bigger than you know, the day to day. So all those things kind of spring to mind in like a jumble.
Very nice. And you have about how many people now?
There's seven of us. Seven. In the team.
Probably, I think you mentioned
there'll be nine, ten of us relatively soon in March and beyond.
Yeah. Because offline, you mentioned you were looking for people, you know, because as you grow, you're going to need. So
yeah, I mean, we're always
any particular kind of characteristics that you're looking for, you know, in case anyone listening would like to come and join you.
I mean, again, you have to fundamentally care about what we're doing, because that will get you through some of the hard times. If you have, and I think about this in work generally, forget us for a second. If you care about what the company's doing at a company level, then that goes a long, long way for a lot of people, especially it did for me. If it resonated with me, why I was getting up in the morning, you know, it helps you get up early with the spring in your step, you know, regardless of the actual day to day of what you're doing, there's an overarching reason that's bigger than you for you to go and do something. So that, and we can tell when people don't like what we do or don't really care. Mm-hmm. That's really important. I'm a big believer in hard work, not just putting in hours for the hours' sake, but you know,
dedication
is important to me, and it's important to the rest of the team. And yeah, being a problem solver, being a problem solver helps, especially in our environment, because you encounter problems every day, and there's always a solution. And the other one would be a good team player. I think the difference between a small organization like ours and like a big corporate organization is, in a big corporate organization, it inspires political behavior. I've observed, not necessarily Wellington or Barclays, but in other organizations, where people feel like they're in competition with each other for promotions or other positions. None of that here. There's absolutely none of that. If the company does well, we all do well together. So that's it's a different environment. So be a team player and you'll do well.
Very nice. So how can people get in touch with you or Tigger?
They can, I'll give out my email. Shall I give out my email? Is that a good idea?
Yeah, whatever you feel.
I will try my best to respond. So tom@tigger.co.uk. Drop me. It'd be great if you download the app. Any feedback, send it to me. If you want to meet and chat, more than open to exploring that. Send me an email.
Perfect. And finally, any particular call to action? You mentioned quite a few actually through the conversation, but any one last one?
Mine would be, I mean, obviously download Tigger and start using the app would be the one, but just start impact investing. And if Tigger's the way for you to do it, then do it. But the more people do this, then we can actually do the things that we're saying is to actually solve these problems. We need people to invest to solve the problems in companies that are already doing it. So either impact invest or start your own startup that's addressing a problem. Those would be my calls to action.
Amazing.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Tom. That's all for today. Bye for now. And until our next episode of Impact Leaders. Please remember to check our sponsors' websites as well for upcoming events. We happen to have actually one today that we're recording with Fast Forward 2030 on SDG 17 on partnerships. Obviously, when you listen to this, you're not going to be able to attend, but you may be able to watch and listen to some of the information and everything that we got out of it. And obviously, realchanges.com as well, as you know already. So thank you very much, and until next time.
This was Impact Leaders. Impact Leaders is brought to you by Fast Forward 2030 and Real Changers. Visit fastforward2030.com to learn how to include the global goals into your business models, and realchangers.com to find talent and careers with impact.